Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old, rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. This is Paul Coliani, personal empowerment coach and host of The Overwhelmed Brain. And this is the personal growth show for the critical thinker. On every episode, we'll talk about practical down-to-earth steps to help you improve your mood and keep you sane in this powerful journey we call life. I want to help you bridge the gap between your emotions and reason, causing you to discover why you do the things you do and what you can do to reach higher levels of happiness and lower levels of stress and overwhelm. So I recently received a letter from someone who is in a manipulative relationship. And I want to talk about that a little bit in this first segment about one of the things that maybe makes them manipulative. The episode I had a few weeks back was called Are You With a Manipulative Person? And it also had another title of Indecision and Regret, which covered something else. But also before that, maybe a couple months, 3 months ago, I had another episode on manipulative people as well. But this last one has really sparked some interest in regards to, am I living with a manipulative person? I've been receiving a few letters from people who are in relationships who they think they are in manipulative relationships. I mean, some of them didn't know they were until they heard that episode just a few weeks back. So what they did was played the episode for their partner. Typically men are the manipulative people. Some women are too. But like I said, I've heard from quite a few people who have really resonated with the episode. And they were like, oh my God, my husband does that. He does those things. I never even realized what he was doing, but that's what he does. And the light bulbs are coming on. You know, I don't like to give you bad news. You're living with a manipulative person. I don't like to do that. But at the same time, you need to know so that you have the knowledge that you can do something with, you can take action on, or even address with your partner, your spouse. It's so that you can know what's happening to you. Because here's what happens with manipulative people. Is that they are so good at what they do that they can make you think that you're the problem and not them. They can make you think that you need to trust them because they're right and you're wrong. But you don't see that they're doing that. You just see that it's happening. You just know that when you talk and then they talk, what you said isn't valid anymore. And what they said is. And just like last week's episode where I talked about the new normal, the dysfunction of the new normal in your relationship, that's what happens is that every time you figure out that you're quote wrong and they're quote right, then it becomes the new normal. So that the next time you have a conversation about a similar subject matter or even the same subject matter that maybe you've been arguing about that maybe causes some strife or contention, then it plays off of the last conversation. Remember what we talked about last time, and this is how you think, and this is where you go. This is how a manipulative person can talk, is that they will engage your brain and take you down a funnel where it ends up being about them being the correct, righteous, maybe not righteous, but more logical, more reasonable person. A typical manipulative conversation will end up being where the manipulator looks reasonable and the person who's on the receiving end of that manipulation feels wrong and feels justifiably wrong, which is terrible, and feels like that their emotions aren't really valid in this circumstance or many circumstances, and that their thoughts aren't valid. And pretty soon, invalidation becomes okay. It becomes the new normal. And then from that point, that's the new normal for the relationship. So what happens from that point on is that the manipulator continues going along a path of righteousness, for lack of a better term, and the victim of the manipulation continues to believe more and more because now their foundation is built on, I'm wrong, he's right. Or in some other cases, I'm wrong, she's right. It happens. Everyone's capable of doing it. I don't know why, but men just seem to be better at it for some reason. But I think I might know the reason, actually, because men are typically better at dissociating. I don't know if you've ever heard me talk about dissociation, but the best way to explain it is when you're not connected to your emotions. Men usually have an easier time disconnecting from their emotions because women are very emotional creatures. Maybe it has to do with being born to bear children, to hold a child, and maybe a woman has to develop a more bonding relationship with their child. I don't know what it is, and I haven't looked into the science behind it, but typically women or those in touch with their feminine side have more connection with their emotions. So they're associated, meaning they are connected and they are in the present and they are there with you and they have empathy and sympathy. When someone's associated, they're typically there. You can tell they're there. And when they talk, they inflect as if they were expressing emotion. Like, I'm inflecting now, and I'm slightly exaggerating on purpose, but it's true. It's like when you talk with someone who's emotionally connected, who's associated, who's in the moment and really there with you and wants to bond with you, you can tell there's a different behavior and mannerism that comes out of them. Because you can, for example, hurt yourself and they'll go, oh my God, are you okay? Oh, did I do that? I mean, they'll even start to take responsibility for things when they're associated. But when they're dissociated, it's like Spock, the Vulcan. He dissociates from reality almost because it helps him not feel what he doesn't want to feel. And so how do you create a scenario in your life where you don't want to feel certain feelings? You find ways to do it consciously and subconsciously in your mind. You go, oh, if I think about this emotion and it comes up, I'm going to feel it. So I'm going to do my best to disconnect from that. It's just easier to think of something else. It's easier to watch TV or listen to the radio or talk about some other subject matter. I'm just going to disconnect from that. It's easier not to feel that. So that's what I'll do. I'll dissociate and not connect with my emotions. But what that does is it also disconnects me from people. I'm still there, but I'm not there. I'm still present, but I'm not really present. If you cut your finger, I'll help you, but I won't go, oh my God, you poor thing. If I hurt your feelings, I won't go, oh my God, what did I say? I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to say that, because I'm disconnected. I'm dissociated. I mean, association and dissociation goes a lot farther than that. And one example of that is when you think of a memory that you've had. Like, here's a exercise for you. Think of something that you did that you had a blast at, something you really enjoyed, something you had a lot of fun doing. I mean, I think about when I was a kid, I used to go to the carnival and a lot of the rides would be, extremely fun. I don't feel exactly the same way I did then, but I think about when I was a kid, how much I enjoyed a ride called the Rock and Roll. And they would play rock music and the ride would go just around and around like most rides do. But you sat in this booth that did full somersaults, and you could force it to do somersaults, but it would also do it on its own as well. And thinking about it now actually makes me a little ill because I'm thinking of all the cotton candy and all the junk I was eating and the soda and how that kind of mixes up. I won't get into that. But when I was in this ride, there's two ways to think about a memory like that. I mean, think of one for yourself. But for me, I think about that memory and I go, how can I think about it? I can think about it in two ways. I can see myself doing it from afar, meaning I'm not in my body. I'm actually watching myself with other people do it. That would be called dissociated. I'm actually not in my body having that memory. Or I could be in my body looking through my own eyes, hearing what I heard, feeling what I felt, feeling the metal bar that I had to hold on to, feeling the fiberglass seat that I was sitting on, and then remembering what it was like to feel going upside down and going around and around, and the rock music is very visceral. It's very immersive, and that's totally associated. I'm in that memory. But when I'm dissociated and I see me doing it from afar, then I can watch that and remember that's my memory, but I'm watching it from afar. And that's one of the main differences between associated memories and dissociated memories, is that you can have a memory that's associated looking through your own eyes in your own body, and you'll feel it more. Or you can step out of your own body and see it and watch it happen before you. Or if you can't remember what it looks like, you can hear it or feel it even. And that's a whole other subject matter. But you get the idea, is that you're not in your body. And that makes you feel it differently. It's going to be a different experience, because it's a lot different watching yourself on a roller coaster from the ground and being in that roller coaster about to take the drop. So this can be a tool that can help you, actually, because when you have any type of traumatic memory that you hate visiting in your mind, or it just pops up, to remember it dissociated, where you're not in your body remembering it, and maybe even seeing it from a different perspective, like from different parts of the room, from different viewpoints, from different people's eyes, like being in someone else that's in the room seeing it, or introducing someone else into the memory and seeing it from their eyes, and how, what would they think? All these things that you can do with your memories. And having it dissociated or associated changes how you feel about it. It's a neat thing. It's a neat experiment. I highly recommend you try it with some memories of yours. But the idea behind even experimenting with that is to feel all the good memories associated in your body and all the bad memories dissociated. Meaning you can still have the memory. It still happened, but now it doesn't have to have the impact it once did. So tying this in to the manipulative person who is typically dissociated. This is just a guess on my part. I think a lot of manipulative people are typically dissociated. They experience life disconnected from their emotions, and even though they appear to be there, they're not there. They're not in their, I don't want to say they're not in their body, but they're disconnected from the sensory experience of life. So what does that mean? That means that when other people are in pain or misery, that maybe they can't connect to those people because they can't even connect to themselves. And because of that, they're not going to feel empathetic or sympathetic. They're not going to feel what you feel because you're probably associated. And if you're not, it's okay. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it becomes a bad thing when you take a dissociated state like that, and you're manipulative, and you're doing bad behavior that's hurting other people. Because I know people that have trouble connecting with their emotions, and they're fine, they're great people, but they just have trouble connecting and associating and experiencing things from that point of view. But now you mix bad behavior with that as well. And you didn't hear it from me, and I'm not one to qualify this because I don't have a medical background, but in my opinion, that could lead to sociopathic disorders or personality types where you have sociopathic, antisocial, psychopathic behavior where they're just so disconnected from their emotions, they don't care who's hurt from their behavior. They don't care if they are driving a steamroller over everyone's emotions, because they don't understand. They don't feel it. It's not something that registers with them. And because of that, it's hard to connect with them. And it's hard for them to be in a healthy relationship where there is reciprocal love and support and all the things that make up a great, healthy, intimate relationship. It's hard for them. That's not an excuse. I'm not giving them a free ticket out of their manipulative ways, but it's good for them to know that they may be disconnected from their emotions. So what I want to do is tie all this talk about manipulative people and dissociation and disconnect with a letter that I received and what one woman did and is going through as we speak with her relationship. I'll be right back. How do you sleep at night? Seriously though, how do you sleep? I remember I had this cheap memory foam mattress knockoff when I lived in Oregon. I would wake up with a new pain every now and then and wonder what I did wrong the night before. I just thought it was the way I slept, not the mattress I slept on. Well, I went to a really expensive mattress store and I laid on one of their beds and suddenly I realized that it wasn't me laying in some weird position, although that does happen from time to time. It was the mattress I was using. That day, I learned a valuable lesson. Some pains are not from getting older. They can be from laying on the wrong mattress, or in my case, a knockoff mattress from a company that only had profit in mind, not comfort. I am so happy to tell you about a company that does just the opposite. They design mattresses with an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink and bounce. And they bring it to you at a very affordable price, risk-free. I'm talking about Casper. Time magazine named their mattress as one of the best inventions of 2015. In fact, it's now the most awarded mattress of the decade. With a springy latex and supportive memory foam design, think about this for a minute. What's a full night of sleep like for you now? And what could it be like to sink into a Casper mattress? I mean, think about the best night's sleep possible for just a moment. What would that be like? They know you're going to love this mattress, and they're giving you 100 days to try it out risk-free. If you're in the US or Canada, they'll deliver it to your door for free. You get to try it out, and if you're not happy within that 100 days, they'll pick it up for you for free and give you a full refund. This is a no-brainer. And speaking of brain, go to casper.com/brain. This will let them know that you heard about this mattress from me. And on top of that, they've extended a special offer for the Overwhelmed Brain listeners. Use the promo code BRAIN during checkout, and you'll get a massive $50 off an already fantastic price. Check them out today. At least go to their website and see what all the fuss is about. Visit casper.com/brain and use that promo code BRAIN when checking out, and you'll get $50 off today. All right, I'm going to read you a letter that is not exactly an ask, Paul, but I guess it is because there are a couple questions at the end. But this letter is in reference to what I was just talking about the emotionally disconnected, disassociated, manipulative people that we might know in our life. And here's the letter that I've condensed a little bit and taken out some of the private stuff so that we don't identify who this person is. Hi, Paul. Thank you for the podcast on manipulation. I am married to someone whom I recently discovered had manipulated our entire relationship. Our relationship was full of lies, deception, drug use, both physical and mental intimidation, and bullying. He acted like he was the best thing out there. He treated others like crap, too. He put down their accomplishments as if he could do what they do better. He talked a lot, but never backed up what he said with actual results. He demanded his needs were the most important. He laughed when I told him that I was attacked, and when people came to my aid, he got mad at them for helping me. I took a hard look at him, but an even harder look at myself. Why was I accepting such abuse? When did I give yet another person such power over me? My mother was like him, so that might explain a few things. My mindset began a shift when my mom died. She was nothing nice. She was abusive, both mentally and physically, but she was still my mother. Though she died alone, she drove everyone away. My husband gave me hardly any sympathy. He would even tell me how I would end up just like her. Now, whether it was a higher power or my own elevated awakening, I don't know, but my dreams were so eye-opening regarding my relationship. I always had a sensitive sixth sense of people, so to speak. Why did I ignore it with him? But I did finally listen to my intuition only 10 years later. One by one, I stopped, quote, allowing his manipulations. Boy, was it crazy. It was like dealing with a toddler. Shocking, quite frankly. Nonetheless, I did not back down. I wouldn't. I told him I don't have to accept this behavior and manipulation anymore. I told him he is welcome to do it anywhere else, but not here with this family. Now, this was not an overnight process. It took about 2 years, but let me tell you, slowly, he adjusted how he was with me. There's no more cursing at me, no more physical intimidation, but it came with a price. He now feels that he can no longer be the, quote, person he is. Now, this is funny because he said, "You don't love me because if you did, you would have accepted me as I was." I fell for that once, but when I heard it a few more times, I saw what it was, a manipulation tactic to attempt to see if I would take it. I told him, "You're right. I don't accept you. I do not accept a partner who thinks it's okay to abuse me and expect me to take it as a means to show my love for you. So we need to go our separate ways." He saw the change in me, that look that I no longer had a fear of being alone and with my kids and no job and no car. He saw that I was ready to face life without him in it. I told him what I really thought. Years of stuff just thrown at him. His words after that last time was, "Please don't say that again. I don't want my family to break up. I have no desire for a divorce. It hurts me to see you like this," meaning distant, distrustful of him, no longer, quote, in love, ready to divorce. "We can make this better, please." I must say, I have seen a difference, but my question is, has it come too late? I'm at a pivotal moment in my life, 40, almost 41. I am not going to die broken. I have not been well. My health is not good, but I think it's because of the life I have lived, hidden, beaten down, and walked on. I'm taking my life back. My mind is hungry for knowledge and life experience. I want a new beginning. I allowed myself to let go of my goals, my values, integrity, all in order not only to keep other people happy, but more so to keep them with me. I allowed myself to keep their lies alive, but no more. I have outgrown that life stage. But did I also outgrow the marriage? So, whether or not this relationship will withstand my transformation from the caterpillar to the butterfly with outstretched wings, only time will tell. Okay, Sarah, thank you so much for sharing that powerful story. I think your questions are more rhetorical and just introspective thought that you decided to share with me, but I hope you don't mind that I'm addressing them anyway and want to give you my thoughts and opinions on what you shared here. So again, thank you so much for that. And this is a person who awoke a couple of years ago and said, "I'm being manipulated." And she decided to do something about it. She decided that she was going to take charge and start making the rules. Now, I don't know if you've heard me say this before, but when you're with a controller, a controlling person, a manipulative person, that might be one of the few ways to get through to them, is to start taking control, is to start making the rules, or else, is to give them accountability that if they don't comply, you're out of there. And that's what she did. This is what Sarah did, and it helped him change. But like she said, at a cost. Now, there's a couple things I want to address before we get to that at a cost thing. One of them is something you said in your letter. Let me scroll back up here. She says, her mom was mentally and physically abusive, but she was still my mother. Now, when I read that sentence, I say, and I don't mean disrespect, but so what? I hate to say it that way because I understand family bonds and things like that, but if someone is mentally and physically abusive, I don't care what their bond is, what their blood relation is to you, that doesn't mean Yeah, but she's still family. It shouldn't mean that. This is my personal opinion. I've had people disagree with me here, saying, yeah, but family's family. But my personal opinion is, if anyone, no matter who they are, abuses you, then it doesn't come down to, yeah, but. It comes down to, I need to get away from this person and stay away from this person. Period. So you may or may not agree with that, but when it comes to family, I am perfectly willing to lose that family member if they are abusive. I may be unique, or I may have a lot of support behind that statement, but I think it's very important for you not to compromise yourself around anyone. Don't let anyone abuse you. Don't let anyone abuse you. That's not how life is supposed to be lived. You don't come into this world to be physically or mentally abused. Mental abuse has a wider margin of description, and it might be hard to pinpoint that you're actually being mentally abused sometimes. But if you're feeling bad more than you're feeling good, or if you feel wrong more than you feel right around certain people, there's probably some sort of mental or emotional abuse going on. But Sarah in her letter says something very important. She said that she did allow it to happen. And she put quote around allow to happen because she realized that she was part of the game here. She realized that, yes, I am allowing that to happen because she was afraid of the consequences. And the consequences are, I'm going to be alone with these kids and have no job and no house. But there's something about her letter that has all over it that I don't care about any of that because I'm more important than all of that. And this is where true strength comes from. This is when you step into yourself and go, I don't care if I lose my job, my money, my house, as long as I am in integrity with myself. And of course, she's going to take care of her kids no matter what. I'm assuming she loves her kids, and she's going to take care of them no matter what. No matter what it takes, she's going to do it. But she had to come to that place in herself that she came into alignment with what's most important, which is her foundation, herself. And when you come into that integrity with yourself, then you're going to make decisions that are scary, that you might lose your job, your house, your relationship. You might make decisions that sound absolute and everything's over and the bottom falls out and you're going to fall through. It sounds like that's the direction it might go when you come to an absolute decision like that. Like, I don't care. I'm getting away from this situation because I don't want to be abused anymore or manipulated or anything that's harming you. You come to that place in you. And when you get to that point, that's when you can manipulate positive change for you. But to get to that point, sometimes it does take the proverbial beating down and wearing down of getting more and more sick of being in that place in your life. It's the breakdown before the breakthrough. Sometimes you have to get sick and tired of being sick and tired. And you'll get to a point where you just go, I don't care. I'm just sick of being beaten down. And when you get to that point, then you're making decisions for yourself. And with Sarah, she said, look, I'm out of here. I'm sick of your manipulation. And there's nothing you can do or say to stop me. And then suddenly her husband goes, oh, crap, I no longer have control. Because that's what they lose. They lose control. Manipulators are afraid to lose that control. As long as they keep manipulating everything around them, they're in control. But if somebody comes along and takes control and says, oh, yeah, you keep doing this, keep doing this, keep doing this. If you keep doing this, I'm out of here. I'm taking the kids with me. I'm making that up, but I'm out of here. And there's nothing you can do to stop me. When that kind of power comes to you and you make those kinds of decisions, that's when you'll see change. I'm not saying that this works out every time, each and every time. And it's possible that he could have harmed her. He could have physically abused her after that point. So you have to assess your own situation and where you are and plan ahead and make the right decisions for you and for your kids if you have kids. But you do have to come to that alignment in yourself going, I don't care what it takes. I don't care if I lose something else in my life, because what's being compromised here? It's me. It's me being compromised. And you could be in the wealthiest relationship with all the money in the world and rely on that money. But if you feel unhappy or abused, what's the point? What are you going to do? The money's not going to matter because the happiness isn't there. Because you're not in integrity with yourself. You're not making decisions for you to support you. You become, you've heard me say this, you become your own parent. How would my own parent treat me? Well, if I was my own parent, this is what I would do. Get the hell away from that guy. Or whatever your parent would say. So I really like that Sarah did this, because what happened was her husband said, "What? There's accountability for my behavior?" And suddenly he started backing off. I better change. And this is one way a manipulative person can change. I better change. And so it sounds like he did. After a couple of years, he really backed off and realized that what he was doing was not good for her. He may not agree with her, but his need to be in a family, to be in a relationship, is now being threatened. So now this is something that he can't manipulate, because he can't control her will. He can't control her spirit. She has it set in her mind that she's not going to stand for it anymore. And he goes, "What? It's so much easier when you stand for it, though." I'm making up words in his mouth, but probably something way back there. It's easier to be who I am when she is who she is. That way I can continue being who I am. So anyway, Sarah, let me come back to your mom real quick. You said your mom was the same way. And this is very common. We often marry people who are very similar to someone else when we were younger. And that's because our brain gets confused and mixes love with pain, love with abuse, worth with pain and abuse. When our brain confuses those signals, because when we're a kid, we don't know any better, so we're just taking all this information in going, in order for me to feel love from my mom, I also have to take this abuse, or your dad or someone else. And then our brain goes, okay, so I should look for people that are abusive so that I can feel love. I'm way oversimplifying it here, but you get the idea. So think about what you don't like in your childhood about people that were your caretakers or any influence in your life whatsoever, and what behavior did you not like about them? Did you end up getting into in relationships later on in life? When you start connecting those dots, you start to see a pattern that you either need to break, or if you've already broken, then you can go, wow, I'm not going to marry my mom or my dad ever again because I didn't like that behavior. I just didn't know that I was choosing that behavior, typically unconsciously, in my partners. When I go through life, when you are attracted to certain behaviors, it's because someone else portrayed those behaviors when you were younger, but that also led to pain. So it's just good to be aware of the relationship you're in, or that you've been in, or that the people that you're attracting most, or that you're attracted to most in your life, can represent those that were in your life in the past that made you feel bad about yourself, that damaged you in some way. And you just want to be aware that there are behavior characteristics that you might be attracted to that aren't necessarily healthy. So when Sarah mentions her mom and how her mom was pretty much the same way, that's probably where it came from. So I'm so glad that, Sarah, that you recognize this so that you know what to look for in your next relationship if and when that happens. Now, another thing you mentioned in your letter was something about an awakening. You said that your dreams were so eye-opening. Now, the wonderful thing about dreams, I know that there's still a lot of speculation and talk about dreams, but how I've come to know dreams to be are all the data that our senses have collected throughout our life, especially in the past few days. We typically dream about things that are in some way associated to the past few days, even though that we might dream of some alien world and it has nothing to do with what was happening in our life. My interpretation of dreams is that It's all in our mind anyway. It's all in our subconscious mind, and it has to come out some way, usually in the form of symbolism. For example, I have a client that imagined anger as fire. And as his anger grew, the fire grew. He just had this picture of fire growing. And I thought it was a fantastic way to symbolize anger in himself. I don't know if he dreamed that, but he was telling me that's what comes up for him when he imagines it. So if you can just do this conscious imagination process, where in this case, he consciously envisioned fire being anger, then imagine what your unconscious does when you're sleeping. It probably comes up with all sorts of imagery that associate to your emotions and what's still in there in some way. So if you have any repressed anger or sadness or fear, or you're feeling embarrassed or shameful or guilty, that stuff can come up in your dreams. And to wake up and go, wow, what did I just dream? You can ask yourself, what emotions were associated with that, with those dreams? For example, I had a dream several months ago where I was in a house that was built on the shore of an ocean, and the water was coming in the house. And then suddenly there were sharks coming in the water in the house. And I had to get my girlfriend and her son out of the house. And I was trying to find windows, but now the windows are filling up with water outside the house. And so I was getting fearful and I felt trapped and all these emotions were coming up. So when I woke up, I talked to her about it and I said, you know, I felt fearful and trapped. And so I started thinking, you know, what's going on in my life right now where I feel fearful and trapped? What is that about? And my mind gave me an opportunity to explore that because I woke up out of a dream remembering what happened and connecting the emotions that were part of that dream. So in that particular instance, I forget what it was that I was thinking about or fearing, but I think I came up with something. And since then, I haven't had that same dream or that same emotion from dreams that I've had. But this is something you can do too, is when you wake up from a dream, it is a message. And my personal opinion is that you have emotions that need to be expressed or healed or at least processed in some way. And when you're able to wake up and go, oh, what's going on here? Let me interpret this dream in the sense of, how is it associated to emotions in my life today? With Sarah, she would wake up out of these dreams that she started having and go, whoa. And I don't know what her dreams were, but something clicked, something connected. And she may have been having more literal dreams. Maybe it wasn't symbolic. Maybe she saw her husband in her dream and he was doing certain things. Well, it's probably in there. If you're dreaming it, it's probably in your mind as a thought, as a suspicion, as something, because what we repress has to come out in some way. So dreams are a good way for that to happen. I know there's some esoteric and spiritual beliefs out there about dreams, and I'm not going to talk about that now because that's not the direction I want to take this episode, but that's one way to use your dreams to help you through things. They're very powerful, and they can work in conjunction with your imagination. So if you have any problems figuring out what an emotion is or what it's about or where it comes from, just like I talked in a previous episode, just use your imagination. Add symbolism, imagery to your emotions and see what comes up. It's a great way to process and explore what might be happening in your life. So back to Sarah's letter with the one or two questions that she asked right at the end, which is, hey, I'm at a pivotal moment in my life. I'm almost 41. I refuse to die broken. Even though I'm not in good health, I really believe it's because of the life I've lived, hidden, beaten down, and walked on. She wants to take her life back. She wants to experience more knowledge and more life experience and a new beginning. And she said that she allowed herself to let go of her goals and values, and especially, I'm emphasizing here, her integrity, because she was keeping other people happy. This is what happens with people pleasers, is that they let go of a lot of their own personal ambitions, personal goals and desires and needs to keep other people happy. Because a typical people pleaser, and I'm not saying you are, Sarah, but I'm looking in general, that people pleasers will typically want to keep someone else happy because they think there's a return in it for them. It may seem selfless, but you typically don't do something unless something makes you feel good. For me, when I was a people pleaser, I would make sure that someone else felt good, knowing that it would make me feel good because they would treat me better. This can work with reverse people pleasers, where you're pleasing someone else and they're a people pleaser too, so they turn around and please you too, and it creates a great reciprocal relationship. I don't really know the result of long-term effects of that, but I can't imagine that it would probably last too long, because people pleasing is usually compromising yourself. It's getting out of integrity with yourself, coming out of alignment with who you really are. It's nice and noble, but you can't keep it up. You usually get burnt out. So I'm glad that you discovered this about yourself. But one of the things that you asked was, did I also outgrow the marriage? And you've probably listened to my show enough to remember the question, am I unhappy more than I'm happy? I mean, that's really what it comes down to. In my relationship, am I unhappy more than I'm happy? That's it. Ask yourself that question and you'll know if you outgrew the marriage. With my wife, when she was ready to leave the marriage, she outgrew our relationship because I had spent so many years judging her and not supporting her. And after I healed from a lot of that, the last year of our marriage, she realized where she was with all of that. She tried and tried and tried and tried and tried for 7 years of our entire relationship, knowing each other, and just couldn't take it anymore. And so when I finally changed, she came to the realization that she was no longer in love with me. And she had to make the hard choice and take the hard steps to tell me that it was over. And it was devastating, but it had to happen because she was already past the point of no return. Sarah, are you past the point of no return? I mean, that's your question. Are you unhappy more than you're happy? I think if it's 50-50, that's not a good place. You shouldn't be happy just as much as you are unhappy. I think if you're 75% happy and 25% happy, you're still in a very unbalanced situation. But if you're 90% happy and 10% unhappy, that's still a lot. But that's like taking some of the bad with all of the good. And this is where you do some introspection and figure out if you want that in your life. Sure, it's ideal to be 100% happy and 0% unhappy, but that'll never happen. It won't. It'll never, ever happen. And even when it does, then there's some level of denial in there. It's got to be, because there's going to be an instant split second that you're not happy sometimes. Like, oh, you did all the dishes, but you chipped my favorite cup? So, yes, I'm 100% happy that you did all the dishes, and I am 50% angry that you chipped my cup. So this comes with relationships. We're going to offend our partners. We're going to make our partners upset, even unintentionally. Even when we have all the best intentions in the world, it's going to happen. So it's okay to have some, quote, bad with some good. So you just have to figure out the right balance for you. 90-10 is certainly a personal decision. Even 50-50 is certainly a personal decision. If everything's good or good enough, do I keep going forward in that? But I tell you what, as soon as it crosses that threshold, then there are some obvious facts. I'm unhappy more than I'm happy. That's a problem. So I either need to do something about it, like Sarah did. She decided to take control, create accountability. This is where it's going to go. Otherwise, you ain't getting any more of this, if you know what I'm saying. And I mean that in a broad sense too. It's like, we're not going to have a relationship anymore. We're not going to be able to connect, especially in the way that you want to connect. And that was able to crack open the door for some of his healing from his behavior. I don't know if he healed, but it certainly opened the door to change his behavior. Now, talking about dissociation versus association from the last segment, does that make him more associated and caring? It might. it might be enough for him to go, wow, so when I act badly, I feel bad myself. That's what it sounded like. He sounded like he was starting to associate with some of those inner emotions that maybe he wasn't connected to. So my behavior creates this result? Ouch, okay. So if I change this behavior, that won't feel bad. So who knows? That might be exactly what's happening or not. But that question for you, Sarah, am I unhappy more than I'm happy, is really where you're going to go with this. And quite frankly, you can ask yourself, or let me ask you, how about this? How does this feel when I ask this to you? Are you still in love with your husband? How does that feel? You know, if you get that, that yucky feeling, you may not be, and it may not work out. I don't know. Do you have to be in love to be married? That's probably a subject for another show. Some people marry out of convenience. Some people marry for different reasons. I personally appreciate when love is in the mix. I think it makes it more bonding, more long-lasting, and certainly sharing experiences a lot more pleasurable. But there may be realizations for you that you need to have and just admit, and then see where you go with them. This is one of those leaps of faith. I just have to admit that I feel this way about my husband. And it could be wonderful love, and it might not be. And what you do from that point on will determine where you go inside and how you feel about yourself. Some people can't do it. Some people can. Some people can get to a point of, wow, we went through all these changes and all this healing. Now I realize I feel this way about you. What is that way for you? Thank you again, Sarah, for sharing all this. And I do want to hear back from you. And I want to know if you are now this butterfly that you told me about, because you deserve it. You deserve to be happy. You've gotten this far. Don't stop now. Be that fully self-empowered person I know you to be. It's in you. Don't stop now, whatever it takes. Thanks for writing. Stick around. I'm going to read one more quick letter, and then we'll close the show and give you my final thoughts. Be right back. All right, welcome back. I want to tell you about the TOB Patron Program. If you haven't heard me talk about that for weeks and weeks and weeks, this is just a quick reminder that we have a whole website dedicated to private episodes, workbooks and worksheets, group coaching, all kinds of things that are especially for you that we don't share anywhere else. It's not on our regular website. It's patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. If you join the membership program, anywhere from $3 a month to $29 a month, you get all of this extra stuff, including things I don't talk about on this regular show. For example, next week, I'm going to have a private group coaching session with the Patreon members on values and self-sabotage. I don't know if you know about my worksheet, Stop Self-Sabotage, but it's basically talking about your values and how you can fall out of alignment with those values and sabotage your own success, your own path in life. And, you know, the worksheet gets into it and really helps you define those values. But I want to dig a little further and tell you how it affects your life and figure out the best way to stay on course and really get in tune with what's going on in your life so that you know exactly what you value most and why you may be sabotaging yourself. So I'm looking forward to that. That's in the group coaching session. If you're a Platinum Patron member, you'll get that. I hope to see you there. Of course, you don't have to join the Platinum program just for $3 a month. The Bronze program, you can get all the private episodes that I continue to put out weekly. It's a lot of stuff that I don't talk about in this show. Some things that are like more mini classes and things like that, so that you can start doing some more deep diving on yourself, because I talk about very specific issues that people write to me about on this show and other things that come up in my mind. But sometimes I want to dive even further into certain things that I just don't have the time for here. So I hope you join me over there. Go to patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. It's not only a way for you to support the show, it's also a way for you to get tons more value and a lot more tools to put into your personal growth and self-help tool belt. I hope to see you there, patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. I look forward to connecting with you on the inside. All right, the final letter I want to read today is really short. It's from someone I'm going to call, I already used Sarah. Mary, how about Mary? Dear Paul, I listen to your podcast every day as I find it helps me rationalize things better in my mind. I resonate with many of the issues surrounding self-esteem and codependency. Okay, where do I start? I've been married for over 20 years, and I feel lonely in this marriage. I can't recall the last time I was happy. During our entire marriage, I have done my best to make my partner happy. In exchange, he's lied to me, cheated, hid things from me, and disrespected me. The difficulty is that I feel riddled with guilt every time I think about leaving him. He moved here from another country to be with me, and I felt that I've had the responsibility of ensuring that he fit in and got well adjusted. He has never had a full-time job, and we basically work together in various businesses. There are other things surrounding our issues and how I feel. However, the most crucial is the lack of trust. He makes me feel that I'm never good enough, even though I have always worked and took care of the children and even went back to school. I feel that there's no way out, and at times, I wish I could just go to sleep and never awaken. I know this sounds dramatic. It's just that I'm at this point in my life where I feel that everything has no meaning. Thanks for reading, and thank you for being such an understanding and generous human being who has contributed to the well-being of so many listeners. All right, Mary, thank you for sharing that. That is a very common issue I've heard, is that someone will be in an abusive relationship, continuing to get disrespected and put down or verbally, mentally, emotionally, and physically abused sometimes, and they still feel guilty if they think about leaving. It's like they've put on the responsibility for someone else's life on them. Let me let you off the hook, first of all. We talked about a lot of the things that you mentioned in this episode already. So I don't really need to talk about like the lying, cheating, stealing, manipulative husband part. Because really what's most important here is the idea that you are taking responsibility for his ability to make decisions. Now, let me rephrase that so it makes more sense. What you're doing is that you feel responsible for the decisions that he makes for himself. Yes, you said, come in, move with me, everything will be great. But he still has to take responsibility for that decision. You may have said, spend all your money and come over here and I'll take care of you. But he still has to make the decision to do it. He still has to assess his own life and think about what the results are for what he's about to do. From one adult to another, you don't take responsibility for someone else's decisions, even if you convince them to do it, because they still have to do it. If I came up to you and I gave you a stolen credit card and I said, you can go to the store and buy anything you want. This card is stolen, but don't worry. Everything will be taken care of, and I'll make sure that you won't go to jail, you won't get caught, everything will be fine. Is it my responsibility when you go and do that? I may have convinced you, let's just say that you believe me and your ethical standards aren't as high as some other people, and you go ahead and use this stolen credit card. Would anyone blame me for telling you to do that? Or would they blame you for doing it? This is kind of along the same lines, is who bears the onus of responsibility? Is it the person doing the action or the person who convinced the other person to do the action? It's always the person who takes the action, unless they're a child. Now, if what you're saying is that I married a child, which I know isn't true, he's an adult, he's old enough to make decisions on his own, and he's also old enough to be responsible for his decisions. So what you're saying is, you're not responsible for this decision because I told you to do it. This is one of those things that my mom always said. If Billy told you to go jump in a lake, would you go jump in a lake? It would be like, well, no. Well, how come you're not going to go jump in a lake? Because I don't want to. Right. You don't have to do anything anyone tells you. He didn't have to move in, but he wanted to. He chose to. There was an onus of responsibility for his behavior. He decided that he wanted to be with you, so he made the decision to move. This is very similar to when I moved to Georgia. When I was in New Hampshire, I had a choice to stay in New Hampshire or move to Georgia. My girlfriend's like, well, we could just live together. That would be easier. I mean, we're already seeing each other long distance. Why don't you just come down here and move in? And I actually thought about that. I go, no, maybe it would be better if I live apart and, you know, I rent somewhere or whatever until enough time goes by and then we can get together. And she's like, no, it'd just be a lot easier. We'd save on money and we could see each other all the time. It'd just be a lot easier. I'm like, all right. So I decided to do it. But what would happen if I got here and she realized that I was a loser? And she's like, oh, the situation sucks. What have I done? Oh, I convinced him to come down and now he's here. And then she says to me, this relationship isn't working out. I thought you were a different person, but now that you're here, you're not the person I thought you were, or you've changed, or whatever it is. At that point, I have the responsibility of making a decision. Like, wow, do I want to stay with this person who thinks I'm a loser? I better go. Or maybe we can talk about this and work through it and, I don't know, seek therapy or whatever. I mean, this is a point for me to make a decision now. But instead, if I say, well, that's too bad. I'm here, so you're just going to have to live with me. And you're the one who convinced me to come down in the first place. Oh, that's a manipulation tactic. That's what happens, is that some people know how to juke the system and play with your heart to the point where they put all the onus of responsibility on you. Even though I have a full 100% responsibility for myself and what I do. And what that means is that I don't make others feel guilty for my decision to move down, even if they convinced me. And if I do make her feel guilty for my decision, then obviously I'm trying to hide the fact that I wasn't the person I said I was when we get together. And what does that mean? That means that you could have been a victim of fraud. Because if someone moves in with you or you get married with someone and they are not the person that you thought they were, or they've changed, then they've changed the terms of the arrangement. And I'm not saying that that's fraud, but if you're not the person you said you were and you make yourself out to be Mr. Nice Guy, and then you get with someone and then your true colors show up, you know, I could probably paint that as fraud. But if you get together and everything's great for the first few months or even years, and then things turn downhill from there because you weren't that way in the beginning, or you didn't show your true colors in the beginning, then you're changing the original agreement. I know this sounds very businesslike, but think about it. How can you feel guilty about someone changing the original agreement? That's not your guilt. It should be their guilt. They're the ones changing things. They're the one changing the arrangement. And then they're taking advantage of your generosity because they can. And the more generous you are, the more guilty you'll feel because they know how to make you feel guilty. So Mary, I'm letting you off the hook. You don't have to feel guilty. If someone comes into your life and then changes the agreed upon arrangement, it's not your fault. You've done what you could. Your original intention was to have a happy, wonderful, supportive life together in probably a monogamous relationship where there's honesty and integrity and support and sharing your personal secrets with each other. I mean, your original intention never changed. So you have nothing to feel guilty about. Whatever his original intention doesn't matter now, because now he's broken the commitment by doing things that are against you and against the relationship. So let go of the guilt. I know, easier said than done, but do it. This isn't your fault. I don't care if you paid for his plane ticket and sold his home for him so he had nothing to go back to. He's still an adult. He can make decisions and plan ahead and go, wow, but what if it doesn't work out? I better plan for that too. It's not your fault if he doesn't plan for those things. Sure, he could have been young and naive and then did things he may regret later, but he's an adult now. He can make decisions. He can figure things out for himself. don't enable him any longer. I'm not saying your relationship is over, but if you're unhappy more than you're happy, and you've tried to fix things, and they're not fixed, what else are you going to do? And even if you do feel guilty, it'll go away. I guarantee it. Because as soon as you're out of it for at least a month or two, and you start having your own thoughts without his influence in those thoughts, you're going to feel on top of the world. At least with respect to not being in that terrible space of feeling being lied to and cheated on and all this other stuff that you were in. You want to get out of that. If you're really determined to leave, but you're afraid to leave because of the guilt, then I want you to be more afraid of what will happen if you stay. Not one more day should go by where you're not seeking happiness instead of trying to avoid unhappiness. Start seeking happiness today. Make decisions that are right for you, and the path that you need to take will unfold. Thanks so much for writing, Mary, and I wish you the best. Certainly send me an update. And thanks for listening to the show. We're going to lock up for the night, close up shop, and we'll be back during regular business hours a week from today. I hope to see you then. Until next time. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. You heard me talk about them earlier, but I want to thank Casper Mattresses. Go to casper.com/brain and make sure to use the code word brain so you get $50 off when you buy your Casper mattress. casper.com/brain. And I also want to thank the patron members of the TOB Patron Program. They're getting things that you've probably never seen or heard because I don't share everything on this show. I hope to see you over in the Patreon program. Go to patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com and start listening to private episodes and get your workbooks and worksheets today, along with any group coaching if you want to join the Platinum Club. All this and more, starting at $3 a month. I hope to see you there. And whether you become a patron or not, I want to thank you if you've purchased one of my books or worksheets or use the Amazon link on the website. The Amazon link is the easiest way to give back, so if you've been listening to months, years, centuries, use that Amazon link every time you shop. Your shopping habits are making a difference, so thank you. And finally, thank you to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And today I want to close the show talking about the idea that manipulative people can change. The truth is that there's a lot of levels of manipulation. And some people are really good at it and have been doing it all their life. Some people found ways to do it and they're just hoping they don't get caught at it or be held accountable for it. And so there's all these different levels and some of us just do it in small ways. But what happens when you reveal someone's manipulative behavior to them? You're going to learn a lot. They're either going to be like, wow, I've been doing that all this time, I didn't realize I was doing that. Or they're going to be like, that's not me. Or they may say something like, sure, I may do that, but, or something similar. And let me tell you what happens. When you reveal someone's behavior to them, you're basically showing them all your cards. Meaning, I have something on you and I'm going to show you what I have on you. It's like a police officer who has a friend that he knows robbed a bank. Like, it's a bank robber that hasn't been caught yet. So the police officer goes over to his friend's house and says, I know what you've done, and someday you're going to get caught. And the friend's like, what? What do you mean? And the cop goes, I know you've robbed a bank. And the friend's like, what? And he gets scared, and he's like, well, what are you going to do? Well, I just want you to know that that's illegal, and you better stop it right now. And the friend goes, of course I'll stop it. I'll stop it right away. And then, whatever they talk about, and the police officer leaves and his friend moves out of town the next day because he showed him his hand. The police officer came over with all the data, all the incriminating evidence, and said, I know what you're doing. And then the robber is like, oh, Well, I better go to a different town and do it there then. Okay. That's a bad idea then. So this has happened with a few listeners of my show. They played the episode on manipulative people. I guess this is an episode on manipulative people too, but it didn't start off that way, but I guess it turned into that. But that's okay, because we need to know that this exists. But they would play the episode for their boyfriend or their husband, and some would be surprised and some wouldn't, and some would use what they learned so that they know how to manipulate even further without doing what I described in the episode. And let me tell you what, that can work. If manipulators learn what behavior is manipulative and they know the other person's aware of that behavior, guess what they're going to do? If they want to stay manipulative, they're going to do something else that wasn't in that episode. I hate to say that, but that can happen. So what do you do? How do you change their behavior? It all comes down to, like I've said before, accountability. I know what you're doing, and if you don't stop, I'm going to leave. They may not understand because they're so dissociated, they're so disconnected, they don't even realize what they're doing, but it doesn't matter because you have to honor you. And even if you don't know, I mean, you may not know what they're doing, actually. You may say, I don't know how you're doing it, but every time we have a conversation, I feel bad and I'm made to feel guilty. And quite frankly, you take responsibility for nothing. And even when you take responsibility, it still ends up being my fault somehow. So maybe you just have to get out of that situation. But the idea of showing them your hand, everything that you know about them, it could go one way or the other. It could really enlighten them and go, wow, I've been doing that? Oh my God, I better get some help. Or I better work on myself or something. Or they could use it against you. And, you know, there's no right answer. There really isn't. I just want you to be aware that it can happen. But now that you're aware of how manipulative behavior works, because you've heard that episode and other episodes I've done, including this one, then you're going to be aware of what they're doing, even when you don't know the particular tactic. Why? Because you feel bad after conversations with them, because they've told you how to think. They told you how to think and what to think and what opinions you need to have, because XYZ is more logical than your thought process. They're good at it. They know how to talk the talk and make it appear to be your fault, your responsibility, and they're not going to take any responsibility. They're not going to take the blame, the responsibility, even when they say they're going to do it, because that's all part of the talk. You're right. I'm going to take responsibility for that. You're right. I'm going to get myself fixed. And then 3 days later, they're the same person they always were. And you're wondering, I thought he was going to heal from this and get help. But now he's still the same person. And now you have to take responsibility and be accountable to yourself, going, am I going to continue allowing this behavior in my life? And just like the letter writer today, she said, I stopped allowing that behavior in my life. And I pointed out that if he continues, that it's just not going to work and I'm going to leave. And he changed. But for her, it might be too late. For you, maybe there's a chance if you're in that situation. Hopefully not. But if you are, or if someone you know, there's always a chance. There really is. I believe in the human potential. I believe that anything's possible. I believe that even when there's no chance of someone changing, there's still a chance. But does it mean you have to be there until that chance arises? Does it mean that you have to continue being abused or unhappy until that opportunity presents itself? No, you don't have to stay in any type of abusive situation, hoping that they will change. That's not how it works. They can change on their own or they can change with you. Either way, you don't have to stay with a relationship that is bad or harmful to you in any way. So hopefully you will keep your mind open and step into your power and be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. In case you didn't know it, you're powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something that I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.